Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday Savings at The Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of cleaning power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in the store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower. Now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
When was the last time I took a road trip? How many national parks could I hit in 2 weeks? What about hotels? Wait, hey Erica, how much am I spending on travel?
When your questions about life turn into questions about money, there's Erica, the virtual financial assistant to help you spend, save, and plan smarter. Only from Bank of America. What would you like the power to do? Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Your chat may be recorded and monitored for quality assurance. Message and data rates and additional terms may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
How is your sock drawer looking? Maybe it's time for some spring cleaning. Well, Bombas just dropped soft new socks, tees, and underwear to help you get that drawer in a better place. And you know what? I just did it. Once you try Bombas, you are not going to look at socks the same way because they are obsessed over details. They have these anti-blister tabs and cushioned footbeds, so your feet feel great. It's like walking on little pillows. It's amazing. I love my Bombas. Get comfy this spring and give back with Bombas. Head on over to bombas.com/bonkers. Use the code bonkers for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/bonkers. Use the code bonkers at checkout. A cat with a teratoma terrorizes teens on a yacht. We saw The Uninvited, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? Gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure. Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I'm your host, Tall John Shear, a.k.a. Paul Shear, and welcome to Teratomatober, or maybe it's Teratoma Fall? I don't know. All I know is that we've done two movies back-to-back about teratomas who are killing people, and that is weird. Unintentional, but that's where we're at. Clone Girl summer's over, and Teratober is here. It doesn't really roll off the tongue. What do you need to know? Well, The Uninvited came out in 1987 or 1988, depending on where you look. And this movie is about a cat with a teratoma inside, kind of like a Russian nesting doll situation where it's a teratoma wearing a cat suit. I don't know. There's a lot to break down in here, but the cat gets loose on a rich man's yacht that some spring breakers have connived their way on to, and terror or teratoma ensues. Anyway, I don't know how to break it all down, but I'm going to have some help with my co-host, Mr. Jason Mantzoukas.
You know, Paul, the fact that we've chosen two movies that deal with teratoma, it's as if this is something we care about. And I think this was, if I'm not wrong, a complete accident.
It was a complete accident, but I will never put anything past our amazing producer, Avril Halley, for finding movies that thematically connect in ways that are bizarre.
To watch a movie that came out this year, or just not even this year, this past month, you know, Malignant, James Wan's Malignant. And then what year was this from?
1987.
1987's The Uninvited, a movie I had never heard of. Had you?
Never. No. Well, I mean, Jason, I think the reason why we haven't heard of this movie is because of the first title card, which was Amazing Movies. That was the name of the production company. Amazing Movies.
What would this you call movie, this entire movie, and I'm wondering if you think of this in the same way that I do. I watched this, and I kept being like, what is this movie?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it keeps and so I got like 20 minutes in and I felt like this movie was the, do you remember the Adult Swim special Too Many Cooks?
Yeah.
This movie is Too Many Cooks as a movie. It just keeps introducing characters, introducing genre changes. It starts off inside of like a lab facility where they're experimenting on cats, and then it turns into like a teen sex comedy, but then it turns into a mobster gets to the Cayman Islands chase movie. Like it keeps changing what it is so much so that I was like, am I supposed to be paying attention to these characters? It felt like too many cooks. Like, who are the characters I'm meant to be following?
Well, here's the other part of it that's so bizarre, which is simply that there are no other characters besides the people that we are introduced to. This movie really has no extra speaking roles besides our main. It is
except for all the people before the boat. There are
very few.
But those
manager.
But it's all the people that are working at the cat lab who get murdered when the cat gets watching all those people and you're like, wait a minute, are these important people? Nope, they're all dead now.
They're all but it had the same opening as Malignant. The same opening. I will say this: we were talking about too many characters, but today we are without one of our staple characters. I'm going to call her a character.
Wow.
And that is June.
She is not going to be pleased with that.
Miss June Diane Raphael, who watched this movie and then her call time shifted. And because of release dates, we could not figure out how to do this episode with her. So we wanted to make sure we didn't release a rerun. So here we are, Jason and I, for the first time ever in 10 plus years, doing an episode, just me and you.
Wow.
This is
interesting. We'll try and get June's, because you said she watched it. We'll try and get some sort of reaction to this from June at a future date.
I will see if I can get her in front of a microphone. It's very difficult. She's a very busy person. but I know that I really want to get her thoughts on the t-shirts in this movie. Because, again, 80s style is something I'm constantly amazed by, and the shirts in this movie by our two lead characters that we're introduced to them are bizarre. And I don't know if you remember these shirts, but I've never seen a shirt like this. It's a t-shirt where the collar is intact, but a large portion of it beneath the collar is not. It's all cut up.
It's all like there's exposed, you know.
But the collar is still there, the white collar, and this
movie's got a lot of 80s. There's a lot of 80s fashion. There's a lot of 80s hairstyles from both. To try and explain the story of this movie, because for the all intents and purposes, this movie is about a group of teenagers who are on spring break,
yes,
who get kind of brought onto a kind of generic mobster villain bad guy's yacht. He's trying to escape to the Cayman Islands with $4 million so he can pick up even more of his money. His right-hand man is George Kennedy, who's like, you know, George Kennedy.
By the way, top billed. George Kennedy
is top billed.
Of course,
because everybody else is an unknown.
Yes, and he has a very small part. He is like the lead henchman to this main man who, by the way, I was like, is this guy Charlton Heston's stand-in? Because he has the same kind of voice as Charlton Heston, and he has got a very thick mustache, and we know that he's wealthy because he's been on the cover of Forbes twice.
One of the teenage boys, it keeps talking to him like, I look up to you so much. You're my hero. So I was like, oh, so this guy isn't like a mobster. Like, he's a bad guy.
He's somebody. Gordon Gekko.
Yes. He's some sort of businessman who is like a known person, but he is doing incredibly easy. He's either embezzling this money or I couldn't figure it out. He needs to get to the Cayman Islands so he can get his money out. They're being chased. So the teenagers agree to be the crew of the yacht.
Well, unbeknownst to them.
Meanwhile, there is a cat on board that has a demon living inside it.
And let's just talk it. Let's break it down. Because
that's the movie.
The teratoma is not. We understood a teratoma in the last film to be a part of of the body, like a cancerous growth. Here, the teratoma is simply a straight-up alien, a ghoulie, if you remember that film, kind of creature that lives inside the cat, so much so that it can take itself out of the cat's mouth, attack, yes, and then open the cat's mouth and get back in like a little weasel.
In the beginning, it felt like Alien, like you, yes, said earlier, like where Alien opens its mouth and then a smaller head and mouth comes out of it.
Yeah.
Because that's its first appearance, appears like that. But then, yes, it appears as though the teratoma or the whatever, alien or whatever it is, can fully exit the cat. Cat's body, leaving behind just, I'm assuming, the like a pelt, and then it, yes, comes back, crawls inside. Did you think at all, the first couple of times I saw the alien, yeah, it looked like a dog, and I was like, what an irony would it be if there was a dog?
Oh, a dog in a cat
of this cat.
What an ultimate revenge the dog.
It turns out
finally.
It's not.
I mean, we don't, by the way, it turns out we don't know what it turns out to
be. We don't know,
be.
But I was like, wow, that would be really dogs out there trying to give cats a bad name.
Do you remember Ghoulies, Jason, at all? Like, I
remember the video box because it was so clear what, right? Ghoulies was the thing sticking, yes, its head up from the toilet, right?
Yes, I mean, that I've never saw the movie either, but I just
see the movie, but I have absolute recall of the video cassette box on the shelf.
Me too. It's like a little alien coming out of a toilet seat with suspenders, like wearing almost like a Mork and Mindy outfit.
Oh, I don't remember suspenders.
Oh, yeah, he's wearing a blue shirt with red suspenders.
Oh, I didn't realize it was even that far. Okay, wow.
Yeah, so Ghoulies are kind of like, I think, like an R-rated
Gremlins,
you know, and so there's Ghoulies 1 and Ghoulies 2.
Gremlins, Chud, like there was all these movies that were, were you a horror movie kid?
No,
or
my
teenager,
God, no.
I mean,
Jason, one of my like strongest memories as a child was seeing a mere like moment of Nightmare on Elm Street, like one of the later ones, and being so freaked out that as an older child, like I didn't know what to do with myself because I was too old to go into my parents' bedroom, but that's the only thing that I wanted.
Oh, that's so funny.
Like,
yeah,
I was like, I need to get out of this thing. But I remember being in my bed going, it's not appropriate. I would feel uncomfortable do this. But
yeah,
like I was not into horror. My mom loved horror. My mom was always watching Phantasm and Flowers in the Attic. My mom read all those V.C. Andrews books, and she was, you know, watching
Phantasm.
Psycho.
That's interesting.
I know. She was...
I also was not a horror person. Not a horror slasher kind of what you're to Hellraiser, Phantasm, yeah, like that stuff. I watched Psycho or like the old, like the quote unquote, like The Omen or The Exorcist, things that were felt like I was supposed to have seen those movies, but I was not into and continue to have not been really, I'm not a horror person. Like I don't keep up on all the Conjuring movies or the, you know, all of the stuff that is being done inside of horror. So much of it to me is lost, but
yes,
like what we're talking about, that era of Ghoulies and Chuds and all of these kind of gross, you know, like I feel like we did Leprechaun on this, which was like a real which was popular at the time, like all those creepy movies that felt like
this,
really gross.
This is like when like Stan Winston was like living the life, when the creature makers, like, you know, there was,
yeah,
this period where you could create a creature that wasn't CGI, and it was like that movie we did with Anthony Michael Hall with that little gnome, the gnome named Norm. You know, it's like, it's just like, let's make them gross, let's make them,
yeah,
weird, let's see their little assholes and like whatever they are, like remember,
oh,
like
man,
they,
don't well, say,
remember
no,
that
let's
scene
let's
when they took off his
assholes.
Pants?
I mean, yeah, like, but they, I think we only saw his butt. Do you remember seeing his asshole?
No,
and
I mean,
that it was little.
A little, I mean, I'm just assuming. But the idea is, like, I feel like we got, like, the full weirdness of these, like,
yes,
monster creators. Like, we're going to do this, and you could show more and do... I mean, I'm looking online, and I read that some people hypothesize...
Oh, boy.
That...
Oh,
that
my God.
This is a... That, okay. So there's one theory that is, this is a cat that is infected with a genetically engineered virus, okay?
Okay.
And that is what is kind of what we're seeing. But what just, other people...
Is this like a COVID-19? It came from a lab?
Well, yes, it came from a lab. That first scene was in the Wuhan. But the other people, I think a stronger contingent, believe that a genetically altered mutant cat is placed inside a house cat. Like someone made a mistake. It's like, oh shit, let's shove this cat in there. Like,
well,
let's
the opening scene. One of the things that I enjoyed about the credits was the credits does this thing where they show you a scene.
Yes.
Then they go to credits.
Yes.
Then they show you another scene. Then they go to credits. Then, you know, you see this sometimes in movies, right?
Yeah.
But they do it for so long, it becomes hilarious. It becomes hilarious how many little scenelets are between the credits and how those scenelets seem to all be from, like, different movies. It becomes absolutely hilarious. But that first scene in the lab where they're referring to the cat by, like, its test subject number and
yes.
they're injecting it with whatever leads me to believe that, yes, whatever experimenting they're doing on the cat is what created the teratoma or something like that. Right? I don't think it's an alien. I think whatever they did in that lab is what caused this cat to be what it is.
I'll play a little clip. This is the most backstory we're going to get.
You think it could be a teratoma?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Never seen anything like this. Look, just bring the subject in and we'll cut it open. See what's growing inside of it.
You know, even looking at that clip, Jason, I'm looking at the x-ray of the cat because it's a freeze frame, and it does look like a cat's body, and there is like a mass inside the belly. So it's like there is like a sleeping mass in there. But because, and I guess this is where I don't know that much, and I've learned a lot of our theories about tumors were taken to task in the Discord in last episode. I learned a lot about a lot of disgusting things, but it doesn't seem like a teratoma can leave and come back. And that's where I feel like these doctors were probably trying to make sense of something that they have never seen before. So we don't know. We just simply don't know what is going on with this cat.
And nor will we ever find out. Nobody who can tell us is still alive. You know, that's the thing is you would think, okay, so at the beginning, they lose the cat gets out. There's like an aimless chase around a parking garage.
Oh, by the way, can I just talk about that chase? They cut to the cat's POV.
Point of view? Yeah.
Yeah.
That happens a couple times in the movie.
And it's so high.
Yeah.
It's as if a cameraman was holding a camera at their knee.
Yes.
So that would mean that the cat would be
The size of a German Shepherd. Yes.
It was making me laugh. Like, no one was like, maybe a little bit lower. No, it was so. It's
no, like the
at
cat
door
was like
handle
the height,
height.
I was just gonna say the cat was the height of a car door. Yes, absolutely.
It's like James Corden's cat from Cats
and
was running around in the parking lot.
You would think that. Oh, okay. This movie is about this cat. This cat is the most interesting thing because it has some sort of murderous thing inside of it. And when it's being chased, the murderous thing comes out and kills people. Okay, you would think the rest of the movie.
By the way, from
the science lab would be trying to get their cat back. Nope.
No. Well, I mean, I think a lot of them have died. It seemed like they were working late at night in the laboratory. I thought it was a very suspect move that the scientist, who seems to be a straight up scientist, takes the gun from the police officer or security guard.
Give me that gun.
Yeah, give me that. And he starts firing off random shots around the garage, like as if he was a crack shot.
The entire movie. This is what blew my mind. Almost every location has an overwhelming amount of ambient noise.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like fans that are going, like air conditioning units, the boat has wind and other, like a lot of the movie is ADR'd as a result, but there are whole scenes that unfold where on every edit, you're hearing the change in pitch of whatever industrial fan that they cannot
because
turn off.
They're in some sort of bowel of the boat, and it's like you're hearing the whirring of fans. But it's not like because the movie dictates it. It's simply because
that's what they were stuck with. So it's
echoing of a car a lot.
Crazy.
I mean,
the ambient sound is so overwhelming.
Wouldn't it be great to have your own small business, right? And when you have that small business, don't you need that support of a big business? Well, let Verizon help champion your small business dream, whether you own a small business or you're scaling one, or maybe even just starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. That's right, from April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon Business Experts for small business support. Paul, what does that mean? It means you can receive a free tech check with one-on-one meetings with a Verizon business expert. Plus, they'll give you personalized advice, solutions that are specific to your small business needs. And you know why? Because Verizon has your back. So don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business. I recently went to the Telluride Comedy Festival, and I was sick and tired of staying in the same kind of cookie-cutter places, and I went on Airbnb, and I found a perfect spot for me and the family. We had an amazing time because we felt like home. Then I realized, wait a second, what if I could give that feeling to someone else? Yes! That's the best part. When you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. That's right. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who have never thought about it or didn't even realize that their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle, and you can make someone feel great and make a little bit of money too, because we all need a little bit of money. And maybe your talent or your gift to the world is having a killer place. So if you have a home, but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Here's something that we've known since the dawn of bread. Everything is better sliced. Let me explain. Slice a pineapple, you get a blast of fresh fruit. Slice some jeans, get some jorts. That's why the new Captain Morgan Sliced went all in on four bold, deliciously sliced cocktail-style flavors, including pineapple daiquiri, strawberry margarita, mango Mai Tai, and passion fruit hurricane. Try the new Captain Morgan Sliced because sliced is better. Visit CaptainMorgan.com to find sliced near you. Does not contain real fruit or juice. Captain Morgan Sliced, premium flavored malt beverage with natural flavor and certified color. Captain Morgan & Co., Plainfield, Illinois. Please drink responsibly. 21 plus.
There is a moment in this movie where George Kennedy, our star, our leader here, who could have easily played our rich millionaire.
I mean, we're talking about George Kennedy from the Dirty Dozen. George, he's like,
this is a gun.
Yes.
George Kennedy, by the way, there is an amazing story that Rob Hubel has posted on his Instagram page. I just thought about this because of Naked Gun, where an actor mistook Rob Hubel for Leslie Nielsen. And
oh, yeah.
Then after days of working with him, and then was revealed that he was not, and the actor had a kind of a meltdown. Like, oh my God, I've been telling all my friends that I've been working with Leslie Nielsen, and
this,
you're not.
This was like in recent time.
And about 3 weeks ago.
And Leslie Nielsen died like 15 years ago
as an elderly man. So Rob not only had to reveal that he was not Leslie Nielsen, but this man's hero has also been dead for quite some time.
I mean, like, that's a real 1-2 blow.
I mean, really, there it is. But George Kennedy is doing his best and against all odds, because you're talking about the sound. The sound is one thing. They are also fighting hard wind.
Oh, yes.
Hard wind. Like,
and you can see it visually.
There's a scene where they're on the front of a boat, and George Kennedy's, I've never seen hair being blown to such a degree where they weren't like, maybe like there's
every
no option.
Cut, everybody in that conversation, every time they cut, their hair is being blown hilariously. Like, they are just prisoners to the environment, and they can't, like, because they've set this movie on the boat and they're committing to that.
Yes.
They are trapped in the circumstances that the environment is giving them. So the hair, the wind rather, is such a problem in so many scenes. You can hear it. You can see it. It's incredible. There's so much funny stuff in there.
And, you know, and we're talking about this movie where, again, this is one element of the movie, because the other element of the movie that is hilariously incongruous to what we've been seeing is this spring break movie that has giant
holes. 1980s spring break kids movie. And if you wouldn't mind, Devin, every time we because they'll do this throughout the movie, they'll hard cut to the spring break young people from like the old men crime
story.
This is
exactly what I was going
to, and they will put upbeat synth music to to key you into the fact that this is the lighthearted part. So, Devin, if you don't mind, will you just drop that in right here so we know we're talking about the spring break part? Boom.
That music is so unnerving because we've just seen a cat kill multiple people, and there's a do 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 do.
Or it happens like I think it happens after like George Kennedy and the other guy kill, after giving the guy an explanation about what blackmail is, and then they kill, they drown him in the hot tub or whatever they drown him in, pool.
Let's talk about that.
Then
by the way,
hard cut to the teenagers who are like having a party.
It's like you're cutting. It's like you're cutting back and forth from The Godfather to Charles in Charge. And it's like, and you have no control over when it's switching. And then all of a sudden, those two shows merged. And it's like, oh gosh, I guess Scott Baio and Willie Ames are now in The Godfather. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
But there is a sequence in here. We miss some large chunks of the film. And this moment where our rich man, who, by the way, is on the cover, I don't know if you saw this, but he's on the cover also of Money magazine. And
I think his name is Mr. Graham.
Okay, yes, Mr. Graham. Walter Graham is on the cover of Money magazine. And this is the Charlton Heston stand-in. And the picture on the front of Money magazine is clearly an image from the movie where he had just drowned the man. It's like at night. It looks like a TMZ photo, but it is the cover photo of Money magazine, and that is up. It's not posed. It is a still in the darkness of night of this man on the Money magazine. And this movie shows those scenes. I mean, this is one of my favorite types of movies because we have 10 days. We got this cat. Let's make a movie. Like, there's an energy
to
this.
That's like, what is the, because the cat, obviously, the most interesting component of the movie, but it is serviced the least. For example, there's the cat seems to try and behave altruistically. So if people are nice to the cat will protect them or will whatever. So do you remember the scene where there's a guy who's nice to the cat and then people come and beat the guy up and steal his truck?
Yes.
And then the cat jumps in the truck and kills the two guys and forces them in the truck to drive off a bridge. I was like, how is this helping the poor man who just got beat up? Now his truck has just been demolished. this cat, I don't understand like what the cat is trying to do.
Well, I was going to ask, is the cat a hero? And the answer would be no, because the cat kills
everybody.
Nice people. The cat kills nice people. Like the two people who survive at the end, and we'll get to them. They arguably should be saved. They seem to be the least involved, the least evil. Not that anyone really deserves to die ultimately.
I think at that point, the cat is just hungry.
Okay.
They keep talking. One of the things I couldn't figure out is they keep talking about like what happens if the cat gets hungry again, blah, blah, blah. It's like what happened, like that guy who's like, I lost feet. When the guy who's shot just grazed with a bullet, which makes, he's grazed in the arm with a bullet, but goes to great effort to be like, oh, but now my arm, I can't feel anything in my arm. I can't feel it. And then they take the bandage off and the cat is just eating his arm whole.
It was so shocking.
Shocking.
The cat was just chowing down. So the cat was sitting there and she's with him. And in like, they're cuddling.
They're making out.
Like, yeah. So she's not feeling like this cat just chowing or smelling it.
Yes. Smelling or hearing it. Hearing a demon or a teratoma just chomping away on this guy's fingers and hand. I was like, this is crazy. But anyway, so he dies. Oh my God. It's the best because once he sees it, he just starts screaming. What is it? The poison is inside me.
Yeah,
I got the poison in my blood. I got the poison in my blood.
By the way,
that's the t-shirt. I got the poison in my blood.
I got the poison in my blood. And by the way, I love that as a t-shirt. And, and it's gotta be the cat coming out of the cat's mouth, which is, by the way, a lot of the posters for this movie. I will say this, that it's a group of people who are not scientists. No one is involved here in understanding anything about this cat, but yet they make some very strong decisions that are immediately cemented. Like, how do they know they got poison? And then why?
When the nerd kid, okay, so there's like three boys, there's the mobster crew,
yes,
which is Mr. What's his name that I just said?
Mr. Graham,
who is like the head bad guy, George Kennedy is his right hand man, and then there's a third guy who dies quite early, and then there is
Gallagher, by the way.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, whose son was the director who won Project Greenlight, I think, the second to last season, directed Piranha 3DD, a movie that I shot one day with.
Oh, that's so funny.
But his dad was in that. His dad is like one of the most famous kind of horror character actors. Like, Clue has been in so much
he's
stuff.
Got
he's
got a
beloved.
Great turn as yes. a kind of... First, he's the kind of scared henchman, and then he has like a run where he's left alone to drive the boat and gets drunk and has like a big kind of drunken scene, and he's great. Anyway, he gets killed
early.
And by
the way, the smartest character, because he's the only one wearing a hat, so you don't see any of his hair blowing around throughout the film. But when he kills that man, it is one of the most unnerving scenes because
he seems unnerved.
Yes.
He seems scared that he just killed someone.
They bring him, they have this scene, and again, this movie jumps around in weird ways where we are introduced to a plot about this financial maven who is doing something wrong. They got too greedy, and he has an inside man, and he believes the inside man has betrayed him, and he brings him to the boat. He is going to pay him off $4 million, but then he winds up killing him. And the way they kill him is so aggressive. They have a gun on him, but instead they decide to drown him in a hot tub where our rich man, our Charlton Heston man, is basically sitting at the edge, almost with his feet in, as they... The camera shot is overhead and they just drowned him and so harsh. And then Clue is just like shaking and almost vomiting that he's the man.
One that did it. Yeah, he's the one that kills him. You would think it would be George Kennedy's job because he's the kind of bruiser. But no, the other guy jumps in and drowns the guy. And then he has a crisis of conscience afterwards that he just did this. Anyway, it's a weird, dark character moment. Inside the movie, but he also dies first. And then you've got the quintet of the Spring Break Kids, which is two women and two men who have kind of coupled off before they get on the boat. And then one lone guy who's part of the group, who's the nerd. And going back to what we were talking about, he's the nerd who figures out that the cat bite produces like poison in your bloodstream because he uses a sextant, a nautical device used to understand distance, I believe. He uses a sextant, a magnifying glass, and a bunch of other, like, he MacGyvers a microscope on board. he's on spring break. He is a teenager on spring break.
Hey,
he MacGyvers
Jason,
a microscope.
You know,
he discovers that the blood is tainted and that the cat or whatever is some sort of like, it's infecting the, it's giving, that's what the poison in the blood is. And that's why when the brunette boy's arm gets eaten, he kills himself by screaming, "I got the poison in my blood," and then jumps overboard.
And he takes
the other woman with him.
I know. Well, she doesn't want to let him kill himself, but
I know
you have to. You have to. But here's the thing: when the poison gets in your blood, it seems like there would be another teratoma formed, or at least that would be like alien,
well, they
right?
Kept
like the idea
threatening.
Like,
there's lots of bubbling beneath the skin surface that they show in the neck and in the chest. Like there's all this bubbling as if there's going to be a chest burster type or as if the person is going to explode. But no, they always hard cut to the people wrapped in a sheet and them throwing them overboard. But
I mean,
here's
by the way,
question.
They wrap those people in a sheet real quick.
Really, like, well.
I mean,
really,
there's no
really
blood
tightly
on the sheets.
Yeah.
But their
Why
body.
Not keep those corpses there for the cat to eat. If they're nervous that the cat needs more food, leave the dead bodies there for the food.
But it also seems to me like it would almost be like as if the cat has injected carbonation into your skin, because the skin bubbles up like blah, 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 and then explodes. But this cat is also so violent. I don't understand what, again, Is the cat a hero? Is it a villain? Is this cat someone who needs to scratch you to get the poison in? Or is it a cat that needs to bite you?
Because it seemed like bite was the concern. Did it bite you at one point? You know?
But it also seems to do such damage in such limited time.
Very true.
And the size of it fluctuates from, and maybe there's the size getting bigger because the cat is eating, but then it gets back in the regular body of the cat. There's a lot of things that I don't know because the cat is getting, that first kill, he kills like a security guard in an instant. There's not even it's like a face rip.
Oh, and this movie does a lot of cutting between like an 80s teen dance party and like the cat viciously ripping someone's throat open or the equivalent thereof.
Yes,
it's pretty funny. There's an insane scene where they're having like a party on the yacht, like dance party on the yacht.
Yes.
And it's like nighttime and it's a party scene. And inexplicably, Mr. Graham, the bad guy, the big bad, he is the boss.
Alex Cord is
just eating a banana.
Yes.
Everybody's drinking, everybody's hanging out, they're dancing. He is just has a banana as his item that he's holding.
I was like,
what is this? Who's like, I want to party more, but I got to get my potassium up. I'm having a potassium deficiency.
This gentleman is bizarre from the get-go because there's a couple things that we don't know. And that are weirdly omitted, and I think it's because they didn't have the budget to actually hire other actors. They set up, when we first meet Mr. Graham, he rescues these two girls from a hotel lobby. They've had a bad spring break. They've had a hard time. They can't get into a hotel. He says, come, I'll have dinner with you. He has dinner with them. Is it creepy? Absolutely. But he's
a creep. Because these are young women and he is old and a creepy jerk.
And the women are aware that like this something is going on, but what he kind of lures them in with is come to my yacht, there is going to be a party. And then the next scene he's talking to this guy who may have ratted him out to the SEC. And that's right.
The SEC, the greatest threat to Mr. Graham is the SEC. That's like big.
This is the big thing. So he has this conversation with this guy and he's like, hey, and tonight I'm having a party. And then they kill him and it's night. And then cut to the next scene is the morning. And we never saw the party. And yet the party happened. It's alluded to. The girls went to that party. And now are coming back to the boat the next day. And whatever happened at this party was so bad that he fired or the whole staff walked.
He says that he was, doesn't he say he was drunk and yelled at the whole staff?
I gave him a piece of my mind. And
so
it's
everybody
my
left.
Ship.
And this ship, to be clear, the ship they're on would need a crew of, I'm going to say, 40 people. It's not like a sailboat or a...
No, it's a,
you know,
it is a giant.
It is a boat. It is not small. And so they basically are... So then he finds out the SEC are on his tail, so he has to leave and go directly to the Cayman Islands. And the spring break teenagers are like, we'll be the crew. And so that is
well,
how...
Well, first of all... The girls come on with guys, which he's not happy with. And he's like, well, guys, you're going to have to go back to land. This is only for the girls. And then they're like, oh, shit, the SEC is coming. And he's like, well, plans have changed. And then George Kennedy delivers this monologue that is straight up bananas.
I don't like you. I don't like punk kids that think the world owes them a living. What that means is despite what duties that the captain has for you, I'm assigning some specific duties right now. You're the cook. You're the busboy and the dishwasher. You're the maid.
He assigns them the jobs on the ship, which these characters then proceed to do. They all are like, okay,
sounds good.
They're leaving Fort Lauderdale. Like, this crew is leaving Florida, leaving
Can
spring break to go
question?
Somewhere. Yes.
So they also, in it as well, so they become the crew. They also are the reason why, because one of the women picks up the cat on the docks. They are the reason that the cat is brought aboard the boat to begin with. So they bring the cat aboard. They bring their these guys aboard. And so then what the rest of the movie is like a trapped on a boat movie with these with a bunch of villains and then these spring break people. Now, why does the cat sabotage the boat?
But, okay, well, the cat doesn't sabotage the boat technically because...
Well, the cat goes in, like, starts swiping in the engine room or whatever.
I thought that the gunshot makes the boat sink.
That's later.
Okay.
There's an earlier scene where the cat is, like, in the machine room and it, like, breaks a bunch of wires or something. And that's the boat stops working. And the captain, the woman who's the captain and the nerdy guy who creates a microscope out of a sextant.
Yes.
They spend the whole movie trying to fix the boat.
Right,
because they're dead in the water.
Well, yes. And so I guess the boat needed to stop moving because they didn't have enough budget to show the boat out in the water.
Maybe.
I mean, there's a moment at the end where they do a cutaway to the boat, which is like, it is my kids' bath toys look better than this boat, this white boat.
You mean the miniatures?
Yes, the miniatures.
The miniatures for the boat sinking are hilarious.
I mean, it's kind that you would even call them a miniature. I mean, because it is.
Yeah, it's great. It really is like it does look like it was filmed in a bathtub. You're absolutely right.
I feel like even getting to the only person left on this boat, we've talked about her a little bit, is the captain. The captain is the daughter of the previous captain who this rich man won the boat from or cheated the boat out of, and she's like
somehow
working.
Yes. So she feels as though it's her father's boat and that she wants it back. But in the meantime, she is captaining it for Mr. Graham, who is a real piece of shit and keeps like lording over her that her father was a failure and her father lost the boat. And if he was a better captain, he wouldn't, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's like constantly needling her about what a piece of shit her father was. And that's like, so she is aligned more with the spring break team,
let me ask you a question here too.
Yeah.
There's two outstanding questions. If I'm a multimillionaire with $4 million in silver suitcases, is it quicker for me to fly to the Bahamas or take a giant yacht to the Bahamas out of the port of Florida? Because I feel like that's a huge time commitment to sail from
I don't think he's trying. I think that was like an emergency move.
Okay.
It seemed to me like he wasn't planning on it because they didn't have a crew. They didn't do this. But then he found out he had to get to the Cayman Islands ASAP ahead of the SEC so that he could get all his money out so that he could be rich and then go and.
Yeah, 3 to 6 days to get there by boat. But at a certain point, even if the SEC was on to him, I feel like he could have said, he doesn't want to leave his boat.
I get it.
But now,
this is clearly a movie, though, where someone was like, well, I have access to a boat.
By the way,
let's make a movie around that.
I believe that
would be what this is.
You'll be shocked about some of the details. I mean, why not just tell you right now? Because they're pretty wonderful. Here's a couple of details. The entire film was shot in Graydon Clark, that's the director's, garage and swimming pool. Or a majority of it was shot in his garage and swimming pool. And he paid $15,000 to rent a yacht that he could use for 2 weeks. So he had 2 weeks there and he could use the rest could be on his swimming pool in there. So that's how he got that thing done. But I will say this, the choice to carry the cat, to adopt a rogue dock cat. That cat was on the dock. They took it as if it had no home. You would think maybe that cat got out. Maybe someone needs that cat. They just steal the cat.
They also take off its collar, which identifies it as a lab experiment.
Yes.
Like the collar is from the laboratory. And so they have evidence. It's not until way later in the movie that after people have been being killed by the cat that they're like, well, you know, remember it was wearing that collar.
Well, they even
the laboratory.
And they even say like it is a like they say, oh, lab experiment. Like there's a moment where they read it and register it and they go,
Like, yeah. Like, it's not like, oh my gosh, read the collar. Yeah. And then they read, no, they read it. It was public information. Like, totally. So at that point, again,
nobody seems to be looking for the cat. That's what was
everyone's dead.
Yeah, I guess that's it. Everybody's dead. That's what I kept not understanding. But regardless, I have in my notes here, minute 50, and I have no idea what's happening.
I mean,
truly, the movie is awash in characters, character motivations. It's enough movie to just have the spring break kids now being the staff on the boat for Mr. Graham.
Yeah.
Never mind the cat with a teratoma that is killing people wantonly.
I don't know what I'm supposed to be following. You don't even need to have the spring break element in it. You really don't. Like, there's
and
no
everybody
reason
gets
it.
A romance too.
Yes.
Like everybody, there's also like a soapy, they don't stop. Even when people start getting killed, they don't stop giving you spring break love stories.
No.
Like even as people are dying, the nerdy kid and the captain are falling in love. You know,
I like that love story, by the way. That was
great.
The one that I was into, because at first the nerdy kid, it feels left out because he's the fifth wheel. And then to find that, like, he found his love, because he refers to himself as Woody Allen, of course, in that moment, like, he's like, hey, we're a bunch of Robert Wagners over here. And he's like, no, I'm Woody Allen. But he's not even that. Like, he also is not like. For a movie.
Wait, did he really say a bunch of Robert Wagners?
I feel like they referenced two other, like, sexy men of the time.
If they referenced Robert Wagner, though, in light of Natalie Wood's death.
Oh, my God.
I didn't clock that. If they did, that would be wild.
How Did This Get Made is sponsored by Squarespace. That's right. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With Squarespace, it's easy to create a beautiful website all on your terms. Now, let me tell you this. Now they have this Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system where you can just drag and drop. It's so easy. It's so fun. Plus, they have this asset library so you can merge all your files from one central hub. I love it so much. Now, let me tell you. I talk about their customer support. I had an issue. Something went wrong. And not only did they get back to me in a timely fashion, but they solved my problem. They were attentive. And I have to say, regardless of anything else, sometimes the best way to judge a company is by their customer service, and Squarespace passed the Paul Scheer test. All right, so you could check out my website with a new feature. That's right. If you bought my book, you can sign up for that and you can get videos and pictures and all this kind of cool stuff. I built that on Squarespace. Check it all out. I love Squarespace. You will too. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/bonkers to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
If you're like me, you can't get enough John Mulaney, and that's good, because during the Netflix Is a Joke Festival, John Mulaney is presenting a brand new show called Everybody's in LA. It's 6 live episodes created and starring John that will stream live on Netflix during the Netflix Is a Joke Fest. This is going to be an unconventional show with very big special guests. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in LA, debuting May 3rd, live at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on Netflix. Hey, everybody. Just wanted to give you a quick heads up here. There's something we should all be doing. It's going to improve your life, make every day a little bit better, and that is eat more Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Yes, think about it. All the gurus, all the coaches out there, they've never said the words, eat more Reese's. I mean, the combination of sweet chocolate and salty peanut butter. I mean, this is something that brings other people and ourselves joy. That's why there's 2 in a pack. Shop Reese's Peanut Butter Cups now at a store near you, found wherever candy is sold, and often in my pantry, because I love these.
There was an element to this movie where even our nerd, even though he MacGyvers a telescope, isn't aggressively nerdy. Like, the character, like, there was some
restraint.
Well,
wait a minute. He plays backgammon, so he's pretty nerdy. At one point, you see him playing backgammon, so he must be a real nerd.
Oh, my God. This moment, when the cat starts taking everybody out.
Yeah.
And again, this is what I love about this movie. This movie does take a couple of nice moments to live in anxiety and fear. Like, there's a great shot of one of the women in the foreground of the frame, completely, like,
I am destroyed. I am wrecked. And there's a scene going on behind her. And it's like, I don't feel like you get that. I don't feel like you get that in modern horror movies. Just like
So what happens is one of the teenage couples is the woman with the curly hair and the guy who gets shot. And then they have the makeout we talked about earlier. And the makeout, because it's 80 yard, the wet mouth sounds are so foregrounded that I really want to caution our audience to really beware. It is a lot of wet mouth sounds, and it goes on for a very long time because what they're doing is giving you this information because then as they pull away from the makeout, that's when it's revealed that the cat is literally eating his arm. Oh. And that's when he says, I got the poison in my blood about a dozen times. And then he jumps off board to take his own life because he's got the poison in his blood. While she's trying to stop him, she gets pulled overboard. Yes. And they are lost forever. Subsequently, her friend, Suzanne, comes undone psychologically. And for the rest of the movie, is just borderline catatonic. And then because of starvation, starts to get tempted to break into the contaminated food reserves. Because the cat, anything the cat touches is contaminated. And so unfortunately for Suzanne, she dies because she eats a few pieces of contaminated bread crust. Oh. I was like, this is tragic.
By the way, they're eating that Repo Man level of like cornflakes and stuff. Like, and Repo Man, which I believe was an Albertsons thing that happened in the 80s and 70s. It was like just white boxes for like generic things, like Lost kind of steals that. Repo Man has that. And this movie has it too. It's like, it is comically no logos on it, but it is. It's just like food, cereal.
Flakes.
Like it, yeah. So she eats. I mean, again, how the disease passes, what the disease is.
No rules.
No rules.
The movie gives us no rules. And because they kill all the scientists in the beginning, there seems to be no, and because nobody comes looking for the cat, there's never exposition. There's never exposition. Actually, there's no exposition for any of the plot lines. We watch this whole movie. We don't know any expositional elements about the cat and how it got to be this way and why. We never get any real understanding about Mr. Graham, why and how his whole plan has existed and what it is.
Nope.
We
don't even get to see the fucking party that creates the biggest issue in the entire film, which is like in a scene that we don't see, he manages to woo these women to come back, fire his entire crew, dispose of this body, and have much stuff happens in a scene that we don't see that I'm confused. I'm like, did they run out of money?
How long
they not
do you think they're on the boat? Just a couple of days, right?
Oh, man. I was going to say like 15 hours.
Yeah.
Why is
Suzanne so hungry that she needs to eat those contaminated scraps?
Well, it's spring break. You know, you're like, you're drinking a lot and you're like, you're eating in weird times. They went out to that weird party, that cheese.
Maybe. I don't know. I think you can hold out. Don't do it.
I mean,
but she's convinced that they're lying to her and that the captain and the nerdy guy are saving all the food for themselves.
I mean, look, I would go into a pantry if everyone's dying. It's like, well, why not eat those gummy bears? I mean, what harm could you do? What harm at this point in your
so
life?
So sad.
I'm thinking about it, and I have another theory about the cat too. We talked about what the cat could be. Is there any world in which the cat is just an angry puppeteer who and everything is fake? And it's just really good.
I would believe you if you literally said, "Oh, this movie was written as just the Mr. Graham and the Spring Break Kids as a movie,
right?"
And the financier came along and said, I'll finance it, but there needs to be a cat that kills people.
Amazing
and
films.
They just dropped it in a handful of times.
Amazing films. I know you have a history of making amazing films. Now, I like what we're doing here with the old man and the kids and the yacht, but
guys, listen, up until now, you've been pretty good films, but I would like to give you something that makes you amazing films.
Well,
this cat.
How would you
and the cat is, when I tell you the cat is like a hand puppet that, you know, you would clumsily, it's not like well done
no.
special effects, visual effects. It's not even very good puppeteering, to be honest.
It's very much like a doll, like a Punch and Judy doll that you would see where like it just, the head
you
just kind of
shoots out. You can see the arm. You can see kind of the arm when it comes into frame from some directions. You can see that there is like a man's arm in there. You know what I mean? Like,
How will we cover that? And they go, no problem. We have the best sounding meow to ever be recorded in
the
film.
When they have the real cat, because there's also a real cat.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real Inside Llewyn Davis kind of scenario. They have a real cat that does wander around the boat and do things. And they just ADR meows all over it, even like, though the cat's mouth never moves.
By the way, does not move. Here's a little montage that Avril made of some of the cat meowing, just to get a sense. And you'll hear some of the music, and you'll go all over the place.
You guys hear that?
This movie has so much absolute nonsense in it, like true nonsense. I can't express enough the abruptness of the cuts from killing people and murder to, and Devin, please put it here, upbeat synth pop, you know, pop music for an 80s dance party. Like, and then we know, like, oh, we're back to this. Everybody's doing great. Now we're like, it's flirting. It's this, it's that, it's this. It's like 80s. Like, but no, it was, we just watched it. It really is very clunky and very funny.
You know, Jason, as you know, like we're both film buffs, and many film buffs will debate for hours. Could Jack have fit on that door frame from the Titanic? And now I guess I want to ask you a question that I had at the end of this film. Could our uninvited cat survive in that storm on the briefcase that it escapes on? Because the end
so
of this
here's
movie,
the
yeah.
thing. So the end of the movie, the boat sinks and our remaining protagonists,
our nerd and captain.
Yes, who are the captain and the nerd who have now fallen in love. Escape on a dinghy, on like a lifeboat, rather.
And it's actually a nice sized lifeboat. Like it is. Yeah. It seems to have some weight to it. It's not like a rubber orange one. Like they, you feel good about their chances of getting to shore.
So, and then of course the cat jumps up, attacks them, and they successfully throw it overboard, and it's over. And then the guy goes, "Rachel, it's not over yet." Boom. And the cat jumps back into the boat and attacks them in the exact same way again. And then
the cat is getting fatter and wider. The cat is looking more and more like Garfield.
Well, I guess it's been eating.
Well, I guess, but not in between those two scenes. Like, I mean, when you first attack, like the cat is thrown into the water and then paddles back to the boat with such force and then is wider. And the only way I could describe it is
the cat seems to be jacked now.
Yes.
It's a jacked cat.
It's a jacked cat.
And we've got ourselves a jacked cat on our hands at the very end.
That's the shirt, Jack Cat. But the cat looks to me
Jacked
like,
Cat.
Blah, meow.
Jacked Cat is like written in like meme font, like big white letters.
I mean, by the way, that cat looks like, and again, I'm dating myself with all these older references, but back in the day, they used to sell these like Garfields that would like stick on your back window or your side window of your car. It was like Garfield was like, like,
I hate Mondays.
Yeah, exactly. But like splayed, like, you know, and it was like, you know, hilarious. I told you about this. If I didn't tell it on the podcast, I must have told you in real life that I, you know, that was a big thing when I was a kid, like these like little signs, and it would all start with like baby on board was like the first one, baby on board. So it would make you slow down if you were near a car like that, or maybe alert the police, whatever the situation might be if you were in an accident. And then they started to have these parody ones, like these other warnings on the car, you know, it's like, hey, asshole on board, or, you know, my wife's a shopper on board, or chocoholic on board. It got all silly. And one day I was at the store and they had one that said, "I'm not bald, I'm just getting more head." And I bought that from my dad because my dad was a bald man.
And I put that up,
but did not understand.
You did not understand the second meaning.
Yeah, the second meaning that my dad was like, had a sign up to sit down. But in my dad's defense.
Did your dad get it?
Oh, yeah. And he was mortified by it.
Because there's a version, too, where your dad also doesn't pick up on it because he's seeing it the way you are. And it's from you. And it's like, you know.
But he also recognized that I bought this and thought it was funny. And he wasn't trying. He was trying to basically say, like, I'm not upset that you're making a bald joke. Like, I want to embrace that you are finding humor here, but I also need to embrace that I can't have a sign that says I'm getting more blowjobs because, you know.
Totally.
Like, you know,
did he have to explain that to you, though?
He
that's what I was wondering.
He basically found a way to take it down but like it was awkward because it was like he couldn't really explain it to me. And then because I used to work at my dad's pharmacy, and one of the guys who was a younger guy explained it to me. He goes, "That means that your dad's having more sex." And I was like, "Oh, got it." So I took down my dad's.
That's really funny.
But all
that's
this
really
is
funny.
All
I know somebody I know, their grandmother once gave that, like when they were like 14 or 13 or 14. I can't remember. Their grandmother gave them a mug that said, "I'm a bitch when I have PMS." And they all were like, "We think she doesn't know what PMS." They decided the grandmother just didn't know and just knew it was like a funny mug.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and just thought it was a funny mug that she didn't quite understand.
Oh, my God. That shit makes me laugh so hard. Because like, you're trying. And I think that's like all like Spencer's gifts. Like,
oh, yeah.
Lived in this line of like,
oh my God,
dirty but not dirty. I mean, I had so many shirts that said like Big Johnson, you know, Big Johnson Seafood Company. It was like Harry Clams, $2.99.
Oh, really? Oh my God. I could never.
Oh, I wore those shirts and I wore them underneath my like, I went to Catholic school. So
like
that was
FBI, Federal Boob Inspector, or whatever.
The Big
nonsense.
Johnson ones, the Big Johnson ones were always like, they're called Big Johnson. And it was like, again, like I didn't quite understand them. Cody is asking, I wore them to Catholic school. The only way I could express my individuality at Catholic school was wearing interesting t-shirts underneath my white shirt. So like if you were able to pull
like
your
Superman, you would pull it open to reveal.
No, what you would do is you would tuck your shirt in as tight as you could so the white shirt would be up against the lettering so it would almost be see-through. So you could wear whatever you wanted underneath.
That's amazing.
Yes. So that was the way that we all got around. Like, so whenever I took off my jacket, if I, you know, it kind of like went down to like write and do my tests, the person behind me would be able to read the menu from Big Johnson Seafood Company.
Oh my God.
This jacked up cat gets like they're able to fight off
cat
meow is able to fight meow motherfucker this cat is able to survive on a floating silver briefcase. They take the $1 million out of one briefcase and then it sails to shore for,
well, because they decide that the only reason the cat continues to attack them is because they're the only thing floating. So it has no place else to go. So they throw a briefcase overboard so that the cat will jump on that instead of jump on the boat.
Yes.
And try and kill them.
Again, crazy logic, but it works. But the cat makes it to shore. And just like the beginning of Jurassic Park 2, this cat is on the beach. This little boy grabs it for the best freeze frame in movie history.
God.
I've ever seen.
No, wait. So, okay, you're wrong little bit.
Wait, it happened. How?
So, the thing that happens, I think, the cat doesn't survive. The teratoma does on the briefcase because when the little boy picks up the cat at the end, it's a different cat.
Yes, okay.
So, I think the alien, demon, whatever, the thing inside of the cat, it survives.
So we were only seeing the teratoma at the end. The jacked cat was just the teratoma.
The jacked cat is just the teratoma.
Okay.
It's not the cat.
It's not the cat anymore.
The tabby cat that it has been. Because the cat that the boy picks up is like a black cat.
Is a black cat, yes.
You know, it's a different color. So I think we're meant to believe. And the kid is looking directly into lens.
The kid picks it up with two hands and looks directly into lens. And it looks like he shit his pants. Like, it's like, it's like, it's like, it's pained, but also like satisfied. It's a weird, and it's like, and the movie ends on this image of a boy just holding this cat. And arguably this cat will then, I guess, kill everyone in his family.
I think, I mean, I kept it, they were a little fast and loose, but the cat seems to be nice to people that are nice to it and try and protect them. So maybe, I'm about to ask a question that I suspect you already have the answer to. Are there sequels to this movie?
I wish I came prepared with that, but no, I mean, I didn't do that research, but yes, there is no sequel that I can find.
Okay. Cause I was like, this is one of those things that I could imagine you saying to me, oh yes, there's five of them.
No, it feels like it is setting it up for a sequel. And I feel like they probably intended it to be this way. What is actually great is when I did this horror movie film festival out in New Orleans a couple of years ago, I found this group called Vinegar Syndrome. And Vinegar Syndrome, if you don't know, I'll give them a shout out because I love what they do. They are the restorers of these types of movies. They're like cult film preservation and re-releasing. And they re-release this on Blu-ray. And it is...
Oh, so they... And this literal one.
This literal one, yeah. So Jason, you got to go on this website because you will... It's like all the movies that we saw in the video store that we weren't allowed to rent.
Totally.
And they do a great job at like restoring them and adding extras and doing all this sort of stuff. That's where Tammy and the T-Rex came from.
That's interesting.
So yeah, they do a bunch of really, really
like,
great
like
things.
Low budget kind of genre stuff.
Exactly. And it's, so they have commentary tracks with the director on there. They have like the whole thing with the cinematographer, which I think I would love to maybe get. It's sold out right now, but I just a shout out to that company for keeping these movies
that
are alive.
I like
that
they're doing that because this is, you know, this is a nuts movie.
Yes.
It's got a lot of problematic 80s stuff that we've seen in a lot of our other 80s movies. This movie might as well have been brought to you by the male gaze.
Yes.
But it is a, it is 80s in ways that are both bad and also amazing.
Yes.
And so I like that they are, you know, because we've done movies like Chopping Mall or like a bunch of movies from this era that have this kind of vibe, this kind of sleazy kind of horror, scary genre vibe. And there was a lot in here that I really enjoyed as a result. You know, the cat stuff is straight up, there was more. I had trouble following the Mr. Graham storyline, but the cat just fucking murdering everybody. I was like, please, bring me more Jack Cat murderer.
I mean, I was kind of, and not, this is not about his character. And again, the sleaziness of this rich man picking up these two women. It was more like, I love this kind of acting, this kind of like, don't you tell me what to do, I'll tell you what to do right now. Go fuck yourself, you dummy. Like, you know, it's like, it's so like emotionless, but also full of like venom. And he is hit. I could watch that gentleman talk for, he's great. Like there's this, like, it's an old school style of acting that I really, really, really love.
It's very stylized and presentational in a way that is part of a lot of genre filmmaking of this era, I feel like.
Obviously we have opinions about this movie, but there are people out there with a different opinion. It is now time for second opinions.
Yet this person recommends it. Tell me, what is the message? Maybe that art is subjective. I need a second opinion.
Well, Jason, I first want to say thank you to John LaJoie for that amazing theme song. But here we go. We got a lot. We got a lot of opinions here that are really fun. These are, there are only 128 total reviews. 62% of them are 5-star. 6% are 1-star. These are always culled together by Nate Kiley, our amazing researcher who puts together all the information on this movie. And look, there is an element to a film like this, like we always get into, where people are being a little bit tongue-in-cheek. So I'm always trying to look through and be like, is this real or is this somebody just, you know, trying to do a bit in the comments. Yeah. But this one, I believe, is real. It's written by Irish, and Irish writes, "This film has been masterfully restored. The picture quality is incredible. The extras are very nice. There's even restored footage that improves the understanding of the plot. Speaking of plot, this film is stupid, but interesting. A genetically modified cat inside a normal cat escapes a lab and gets stranded on a yacht and starts killing passengers. The pacing is excellent. The acting is actually decent. I recommend this new release. It's great and very entertaining. 5 stars. So it's like, oh, wow. Okay, there we go. And then it goes here to Nola Boy 2003. Goes, there aren't too many killer cat movies out there, and the ones that they do have pretty much all suck. This is the best one of the few that they have, so I have to give it 5 stars till something else comes out. It's a really good film, but the special effects could have been better, even for 1989. Look, Friday the 13th, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan, those came out around the same time, so why couldn't this have special effects close to that movie? Also, the box art shows the black cat killing. The cat is orange. A black cat would have suited the film better. I love this film on Blu-ray, and I'm so excited it's available. 5 stars, great killer cat movie. A lot of passion.
I love that this person is only considering it from inside the silo of killer cat movies.
I love that. But it also makes a great point. It would have been better as a black cat. The movie, the sequel, is the better one because that is a black cat on the beach.
Yeah, it would be better.
And
we
finally end with Carl Easter. Carl Easter writes, this was wicked to watch. Because I have 2 cats, so it gave me a good scare. 5 stars. His cats might be laying in wait to.
Or his cats might get some ideas. I loved the reveal early in the first in the stairwell when the cat opens its mouth and another animal emerges from its mouth like that.
Yes.
It's not just, to be clear, it's not just there's a cat that kills people. There's a thing inside the cat that kills people, which is much harder to pull off, and it's arguable that they succeed in pulling it off.
I go back, we talk about this a lot, like it's a great idea. It is a great idea, and like in a way, like it's a crazy idea, but I feel like I miss that someone could take a shot on a movie like this. I mean, this movie had a budget of $200,000, and this is the best part about it, is that $75,000 of that $200,000 budget went to the salaries of George Kennedy, Alex Cord, that's our Charlton Heston guy, and Clue Gulager. And then $15,000 of that went to rent the yacht. So right out of the gate, we have a $100,000 budget. We haven't paid all the actors, and we got to do the whole movie. And Graydon Clark, the director, does do a cameo as research scientist Dr. Gray. The movie, there's no box office numbers. I don't know if it was released. The top 3 movies of the year are Beverly Hills Cop 2, Platoon, and Fatal Attraction. I don't think this came in even in the top 100. Some of the other movies
I've never even heard of this.
Oh,
I don't know if you had, but I
haven't.
This was completely new to me.
Some of his other films are Black Shampoo, Satan's Cheerleaders, The Return, Angel's Revenge, Final Justice, and Dark Future. I imagine all of those are amazing movies, and the production company, not quality wise. And the tagline for this movie was, "They paid for a holiday of a lifetime with their lives." Or, you'll never look at a cat the same way again. Or,
I like that you're doing the tagline in the voice of Mr. Graham.
I only want to do Mr. Graham now. It has 9 lives. You only have 1.
Oh, that's a good one. That's the best one.
That's the best one. This was, this one is, I would recommend watching this movie. I agree with you. It's a mess. Continuity-wise, it's a mess. It's only like 1 hour and 20 minutes. It goes by pretty quick. The end actually gets a little like, the first half is, I think, better than the second half, if you want to even draw a distinction on it. But it's really fun to watch. I mean,
Fun. It's really abandon hope of understanding or that a scene is coming up that's going to help you understand what's going on. It's not. So just like go along for the ride, because that's the only fun you're going to have.
It's
there
a
is
killer
no...
cat on spring break.
Yes.
I mean, that's
there it, is. You're not going to get help to be on that.
And I'm
really,
going to want to watch this 10 times more than Sharknado. Like, if Sharknado had the purity of like this, and this falls in that category of like Death Spa or that mall movie where the chopping mall. Like, it's in that kind of that vein of horror.
Like, it is a low budget, campy horror genre movie, of that era. And it's got all of the hallmarks of it, in for better and for worse. Like, the music is like, you know, cheesy John Carpenter knockoff kind of synthy music. Pop it right back in here. And then, you know, I want to put, can we also get a cut of just a brief, the little bit where the guy keeps saying, I got the poison in my blood.
I think we now need to do it. Now we're forcing Devin to.
Because he says it like 6 times, I think, in a row. It's very funny to me.
We'll leave you all with that. But before we do, Jason, anything that you want to plug?
Yeah, I'll plug the new animated show Star Trek Prodigy that is on Nickelodeon that I'm a voice on. It's incredible. It's really worth tracking down. A great adventure Star Trek story. Set inside the world that Captain Janeway exists inside
Love
of.
Love it. Kate Mulgrew,
really
the great
excellent.
Kate Mulgrew.
The great Kate Mulgrew. And that's new coming out. And if you happen to be in the Boston area and you're going out and about, go to my cousin's bar, Daddy Jones. Great
Love
bar,
that.
Great food. Tell him I said hello.
And just so you know, we are doing some live shows again. How Did This Get Made? Hopefully we'll come back to Largo soon. We're still trying to figure that out, but there's an improv show with a group of us that have done this show Facebook at UCB Theater. You can check that out once a month over at Largo if you're in Los Angeles. They've got a great crew of people. You never know who will be there. Sometimes it'll be Jason, sometimes it'll be me, and sometimes it'll be Rob Hubel or Rob Riggle. A whole bunch of people that you know and you love are popping in and out through that.
It's called Dinosaur Improv.
Yes,
now.
Dinosaur
it's
Improv.
The show, it's the old Facebook show from UCB is now at Largo under the name Dinosaur
and
Improv.
And just check your local listings at Largo-LA. Also, every Thursday, our Twitch channel, Friend Zone, Rob Hubel and I do a show every Thursday, 5 to 7 Pacific time. And every Monday, we are doing a very special, cool thing here called Matinee Monday. Matinee Monday means we are releasing an old episode from the How Did This Get Made vault, and we're putting it back into the main feed, different episodes each week. I'm trying to record a little companion video series for it, so you can check it out on my YouTube page where I give you a little sampling of the episode and serve up which one we are releasing so you can keep up with that as well. So, a big thank you to our super producer, Cody. A big thank you to our audio engineer, Devin, our MVP, Molly, our movie picker, producer Avril Halley, our researcher Nate Kiley, our all-around, I'm going to call him MVP too, because he's also an MVP, July Diaz, and everybody at Earwolf who makes this show so much fun to do, and continue the conversation on our Discord at discord.gg/hdtgm or discord.gg/paulshear. Either way, you will be able to have a great conversation with amazing people. Our moderators keep very safe, cool, inclusive, nice spaces, and as always, you know that our mini episodes are where you can come to get your problems solved. We just concluded a very dramatic ending to our Pool in Canada debate. You can join in with your own problems and we can help you solve them. Group Think, 619-PAUL-ASK, 619-PAUL-ASK. That is our mini episode. And finally, I'll say, if you've not listened to it yet, our Ed Brubaker episode is out, and that's just Jason and I talking to our friend Ed Brubaker in our last mini episode. You can hear what he's up to in his brand new book, Reckless, and we have some special mini stuff coming up as well. So stay tuned for all of that, and we will see you next week for a mini episode. Jason, let's go out with the best line from this movie about poison. Devin, take it away.
Hey, it's Jason Mantzoukas wishing Scott and everybody else of all stars and stripes a happy 15th anniversary, Comedy Bang Bang. You goddamn did it. Eat shit. Hang on, man. Comedy Bang Bang. Comedy Bang Bang.